Welcome to the Connect You podcast, where we interview guests who have transformed their lives, whether in mind, body, health, or wealth. Connect You seeks to discover what drives people and makes them extraordinary. Brought to you by Lewis Jackson, who brings you exciting real-life stories, hot topics, and the truth.
So on today's episode, we have Malkit from Savoy's Properties, and he's an award-winning property investor, manages over 500 tenants, and been featured on the BBC and creator of the Blue Bricks magazine. So I'm fascinated to understand the psychology about who the person is sitting in front of me. So what is it I need to know about Malkit? What can you tell me about Malkit, especially in the early years? Of when you grew up. So take me back to your early years, Malcolm.
So I'm from a migrant family. So my parents came over from India and in the 60s. So, and they met in the UK, got married. I think my mum was 16 years old. She had my brother at 16 at that time. So yeah, there's four of us as siblings. We grew up in an area called Southall, which was predominantly an Asian, Sikh, Punjabi area. I went to school in Southall up until the age of 10. Left school in Southall. We moved to West Drayton. My parents bought some businesses there that they ran. So it was like a convenience store and a takeaway. And then was basically in West Drayton until the age of 15. Then we moved to Hillingdon. And been there ever since. Went to college, university, did a master's, ended up in full-time employment, discovered property, and then went on this whole journey where we are today.
And obviously we're going to dissect that quite a lot, because there's a lot of layers to you, as there is to everyone, that I can imagine at school it was relatively hard growing up coming from a migrant background. Did you experience any pain going through your school years?
Well, when we're in Southall, that was predominantly an Asian background, and it was a happy period of enjoying it, playing football for the school team. When we moved, I went from being from an Asian background to a predominantly white background in a quite working class area in West Drayton. And it was only at that point, I think, it became evident that I was different from the others, because on my first day at school, I got called a packy. I'm like, well, what does that even mean? Mm. And I actually didn't know what it meant. But then obviously over the years, you understand that your background plays a part of who you are, and it's clear that you're different from others, and you know, you need to work hard to try to stand out from the crowd, because the color of your skin, your background, it does play a part on who you are and what you're going to do in the future.
Do you think that's driven you that's driven to you to where you want to become today and the success that you've achieved today?
Yes, because I think when we first brought our first property, I was actually in West Drayton. Mm. I just thought, okay, look, it was quite a deprived area. And we thought, okay, look, you know, we can do our bit to change it. So try to have some nice buy-to-lets. So we brought in West Drayton, and we're still buying in that area. And we're probably one of the larger private landlords there. We've done developments, some commercial properties, and trying to change the area for the better. So, and then provide good quality accommodation within that area. But that source, that experience from that first day at school has led to us investing in an area, because look, if we can't change, you can't change an area if you're not going to put that impact in yourself on a small level. So as a small investor, developer, we made it our sort of goal to try to make a positive change in that area, create some nice co-living homes and some nice buy-to-lets. And we also give them back, where we've taken many self-contained properties, given them to local housing associations and councils that run those properties on our behalf for social housing.
And what was your relationship like with your parents at the time? Because I can imagine it was pretty hard. I personally haven't experienced racism, but I've spoken with people, a lot of people that have, and I've got a lot of friends that are black, Asian. But I can only go off what they've said as well. And their relationship with their parents wasn't as great at the time. What was your relationship like with your parents?
So obviously we're from a migrant background. So my parents were quite driven to try to create something. Because obviously they've got four kids and they were working literally really hard. So my early years, my parents were both working full time. But you know, we had good times, but they weren't around enough because obviously when you're working these low level jobs, then you tend to have to put in some overtime to earn some extra money. So my grandma used to raise us, look after us while my parents were out working. But they were driven to make some change, hence they brought some businesses with the monies that they saved. And that's actually helped me along the way because I could see that, you know, the world isn't that fair. You know, you need to put the graft in, but you need to actually achieve something where you can create maybe some semi-passive income. And I didn't want to be in the situation where my parents were, where they're constantly working, they're not around for their kids. So that's now changed. Obviously, I've got two children myself. I'm there a lot more than my parents, but that wouldn't be possible if they didn't put in that hard work.
And then obviously your relationship now with your parents is, I presume that's a lot better because you've created the...
Yeah, no, it is. And I live not too far from them and I'm always pop in and see them. And they're obviously they're now in their 70s and they're sort of retired and they're just enjoying their time and obviously looking after grandkids and stuff from yourself and the siblings.
I mean, they must be hugely, immensely proud of you because of what you've achieved. But at what cost to yourself has it been?
In terms of what we've done?
Myself
and Sanjay were both working at the time when we started all of this. And it's only, I think, 2017 that I quit my 9-to-5 to focus on the development stuff because that really was taking off. And I needed more time for myself to dedicate. And then I was also finding it quite challenging because I had a city job to actually be there for my son at the time. To actually turn up to do pick up and drop, it was very difficult. So I thought something had to give and it was a job. And I thought at that point then we'd, so at that point we thought, look, let's just go for it. Let's put all the effort in and then base that around our families, which, you know, has worked out really well.
Yeah, because you struck me as a very black and white character, and that will, when you want to do something, you're going to go and do it. When you say it, you'll do it. And that's through following on social media itself. Again, for the guys that don't know, that are listening, or hopefully will listen, it was in 2020 that you appeared on the scene, but that's not just the case. Your business was built a long, long time prior to that. You were investing in property and obviously were working a long time prior to that. So it wasn't a case of you just appeared out of thin air. A lot of hard work went into that, didn't it?
No, that's right. So we've been in property now 22 years.
Yep.
So I was doing it sort of as a side hustle, just trying to create a little bit of income. Just to give you some insight to it. So I finished my degree, finished the master's, went into full-time employment. This was just after the dot-com boom in 2000. What happened after that was in this IT company, 9/11 happened, lastminute.com floated, the economy went into recession. Mm-hmm. And I saw grown men in their 40s being made redundant and they were crying. They said, well, look, I've got mortgages, how am I going to pay for my car loan and so on? I thought, okay, look, at that point I realized you can't be reliant on one income. So I looked at investing in property just to have a little side hustle. So if something happened to myself, if I got made redundant, at least there'll be a secondary source of income which I can rely on. And over the years, as we were investing, it became bigger. And then our appetite within the industry changed. So we wanted to, like, you know, maybe add an extension on, not just, you know, put a liquid paint, put it on rent. We went from that to doing like a new build home, to HMOs, to commercial to residential conversions. And then that then keeps spiraling, and you want to sort of take the next level, because you get, being within property, if you're doing the same thing day in, day out, year in, year out, it gets a little bit boring. So you want to just sort of challenge yourself. So that's what we did. We ended up going into COVID lockdown on the 23rd of March 2020. We went live with Savoy's Properties 1st of April 2020. And then we had, it was actually sort of a gift and a curse, because obviously it was probably the worst time to start a business. But then we thought, okay, look, we've got extra spare time because all these other distractions are now off. So let's just focus on it. So we focus on the brand, the website, delivering for clients as well as ourselves. And then we thought, okay, look, if we're going to do this, we have to do it consistently. So for that 2.5 years, we've been consistent on social media and in what we say and what we're going to deliver. I think in terms of Google reviews, I think we're at nearly 190 five-star Google reviews. Mm-hmm. So from our clients, investors, and more importantly, some of the end users. So it's gone quite well. So we've just, our focus is always just delivering and being true to ourselves.
Was there a desire to prove yourself?
There's not a desire to prove ourselves. I'm more concerned about not failing.
Why?
I think if you're going to do something, you have to push yourself to do it. And I don't see why something shouldn't be possible. I think everything's possible. It's basically, for us, it's, okay, what do you need to do? Who do you need to meet to get it done? And I don't really see failure. I think you only fail if you give up.
Okay.
You know, so we're not giving up. So until then, we haven't failed.
Would you see a sign, if you failed, for example, as, so I'll frame it in a way, for example, myself, when you fail, you then that's the next step to growth. That's the way I look at it. Another way of looking at it is the way you've just explained there, and I agree. But another way that's been presented to me is the way I've just explained it. You have to fail in order to grow.
So in my head, I just programmed it in a different way. So if what you may define as failure, I just put it as education.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, that's just a learning curve. You pay for education. Yeah. That's my education on that. That's fine. But let's make sure that doesn't happen again. So whether it be a mistake that I've made on, say, like a planning application or an element in the build which has costed me money, I just say, okay, that's an education. I'm going to ensure that doesn't happen again.
And I think it's very important that people learn that trait very early on in life, not just in property or in anything. It might be in their employment, is that it doesn't matter if you fail or whatever it is, if you want to take that word fail, you've got to learn from what it is that's happened in your life. It could be to do with your mental health. It could be to do with a relationship, communication, whatever it might be. It's that you've learned from that experience and then you move forward. You obviously have. Look at where you are now, and we'll come on to the success that you've achieved. But talk to me about some of the success that you've had with Savoy's as well. Obviously, you've got 500 tenants.
We've got 500 tenants. We've won 3 awards in the Property Investor Awards. Mm-hmm. I think we were finalists probably 18 categories over the last 3 years. We've won 3 awards with that. We've featured on BBC Radio 4. We were also in The Times a couple of months ago. We write for 2 magazines, HMO Magazine, Blue Bricks. We've done some collaborations this year in terms of events. So we've worked with Watchers of Switzerland. So they shut down their Knightsbridge showroom next to Harrods. We had an exclusive Savoy's event. Then we've gone on to work with GB London, which is UK's biggest supercar showroom. We had an event there, Watford, and then the last one was at Saracens. We've also sponsored Watford last year, and then we've just signed a 2-year deal this year to carry them on. So hopefully if they make it into the Premier League, we'll be a sponsor there with them. Yeah, so it's been good, but I think most important thing is that life's a journey. You need to enjoy the journey. So for me, it's quite fortunate. I've got obviously Sanjay. He's my best mate from school, so I've known him from the age of 11. And we've been on this journey together. Property can actually be quite lonely. So you have to ensure that you're with it and you can share the highs and lows with someone. And as we've now sort of gone ahead, we've added other people to the team. So we've got Hardeep, who's joined us on the development stuff. We've got Lauren and Jay that's joined us with the management side of the business. And there's some other elements that we're going to be adding to our business. And there'll be other people that we'll be bringing on. But for us, it's not ever about the money. It's about the journey and then enjoying it and then bringing people with you. So for us, we just want to help people. So we don't really try to monetize like other people do out there. So our aim is to just represent who we are, like what we've done. So it's about the honesty, integrity, the hard work, remembering obviously where we've come from, and then putting that into Savoy's.
And obviously you can see with your events and the people that attend them, would you say that they align with what you're trying to achieve?
Yes. I'll give you an example. I went to an opening of an event. A broker's new office yesterday, and some lady approached me and she started talking to me. She goes, "Hi, I was at your event." I said, "Okay." She told me her name. I said, "Oh, actually, yeah, I remember you, but I don't think we got to talk." She goes, "Coming to your event, I met Sahar, whose event it was yesterday." And she goes, "Now I've actually joined as a broker for them 2 weeks ago, and it's all down to your event." Then I met another lady, Sarah, yesterday, and she goes, "Oh, I ventured out from Wales to come to your event. You know, it was like a 3.5 hour trip each way. But as a result of that, I realized I needed to come out of my bubble in Wales. And now I've taken a job in Reading, working for some real estate company. And then that was partly down to her coming out and just meeting people outside. And there is life outside of where she lived. And, you know, it's just this embracing of change.
You said something there that interests me quite a lot, actually, about she was in a bubble. And I'll ask you the same question. Do you think people that are in the property world live a double life?
Well, potentially. I would say property, it can be. Let's step it back. So I think like with Instagram, if you have a look at it, you could have someone that pretends to be something and they're not.
Okay.
Yeah. And you could be true to yourself. I think a lot of people are too concerned about showing I'm a finished product. For myself and Sanjay, the best bit of what we had was enjoying those early steps, you know, like buying your first property, getting it. You know, maybe me and him, we were in there over a weekend, we painted it up and then we put it on let. You know, we got a tenant that moved in and it was good. We refinanced it, you know, we've gone from there. But you have to enjoy those little steps and it's a process. I think today everyone's too concerned about showing that they're a polished image.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. And I think, in my opinion, or I'll ask you the question, do you think there is people that could potentially be driven by insecurities?
I think everyone's insecure to a certain extent. Like myself, social media has actually been quite good for me because it's helped me come out of my bubble. Because prior to this, I'm not a public speaker. I'm not an entertainer or anything like that. I was quite a shy person. But it's when I have the opportunity, like what you gave, to come here and talk, and I'm like, okay, look, I've got to step up. Look, just do it. So you're always nervous about doing something. You only get the confidence after you've done it. So now I've done it a few times. It's a lot easier for me. But the first, say, if you have a look at probably the first sort of podcast or first time I'm on camera, I look quite nervous. But then I look at that and I'm like, okay, look, just try to come across a little bit more relaxed and speak more confidently on certain issues and certain matters. So I think it's a journey. Take it, have a look at. Don't be scared to watch yourself on or listen to yourself and then just learn from it. I think learning is the key to everything.
What was you nervous about? Again, I find that fascinating because I love learning about individuals. What was you potentially nervous about today?
Well, today I wasn't actually nervous, but
I'm glad. I'm glad about that.
But when I've first done it, it was just, okay, am I going to be asked a tricky question? Am I going to come across quite well? You know, will I stutter? What am I, you know, how should I do this? Because it's something that you're not used to doing. And as a result, you know, it puts more added pressure on you. So,
yeah, of course.
And I think that also comes, I had a conversation with someone earlier that I met, another property investor, and I explained, look, I was from a working class background. I go, when we sit for dinner with my parents, well, you just sit there quietly, eat, you know, put dishes in the sink and it's done. But if you have a look at middle class and upper class families, they sit around and they'll be like, okay, yeah, did you see Steve's bought this business? He's going to turn that around and he's looking to flip it. They talk business and they talk a lot more. And that doesn't happen in working class families. And that's then reflected when you go to, say, university. So when I was at uni, I had to do presentations. I'd be so nervous. I'd be worrying about it for weeks. Whereas I'll see someone else from a more affluent background, it'll just come up. Little preparation, you may have done 5 minutes and I've been preparing for 2 weeks. And it'll just stand up, be really confident, deliver on it. But that comes down to your upbringing and those moments there, because that confidence has to be instilled in you from a young age.
Would you class yourself as an introvert then?
Possibly. As we do a lot of these social media stuff, and you tend to learn a lot more about yourself.
Yeah.
And then I'm that type of person. I'm quite logical, so I look back at it like, look, why is this? Okay, yeah, it's probably because of this and this. So it's less on the emotional side. Sanjay brings the emotional aspect to it. I bring sort of the logical aspect to the whole game.
And what about your emotions? Because the podcast that you've done, there's not really many that you've shown who you are. It's always been about the property side.
Yeah.
So your emotional side, let's say, have you struggled to show your emotions before? Is that something that you struggle with personally?
Possibly, because it's just the way my brain is. I'm just always just thinking logical. So, you know, I used to be a coder, so I did computer science and I can understand like X plus this equals this. Yeah. So I always have to because I used to write in code, if it's this, then do this. If it's this, it's this. So then that's how I've treated sort of the business aspects of it. And I'm not really there with the emotional side, but I think that's why myself and Sanjay are a good mix and it works quite well, because we look at both aspects from the emotional side, from the logical side, and we then combine that together to find the right way forward.
So I suppose he'd be looking, or you'd be looking at more so the numbers and go, that works. And I don't know, I haven't met him, but he might be looking at, again, that's an emotional decision. You'd be like, no.
Yeah, that's just effectively what it is. So when we look at deals, because I really like to have this site, it's a great site. I'm like, okay, let me have a look at the numbers first. Look, this is what we're putting in. This is what we're getting out. Is it worth it? And then we make a decision based on that.
What about your relationships? Has it ever impacted your relationship with a spouse, for example?
Well, you'll have to ask her. But I think it has. I think having the children sort of softens that aspect up for myself. So, you know, it's only once you have kids, you actually, you know, there's a certain attachment that you have and sense of responsibility and so on. That's helped soften like that emotional side to me. So then plus last year I had a daughter, and I think the bond between the father and the daughter is exceptional. And I could just see the way when I walk into the house and she comes running up to me, she's 18 months, she's like, dada, and like gives me a hug. So it's, that bit's quite nice.
I think it's very hard for me because I felt like I had to prove everyone wrong. And it was very hard for me to communicate that with my ex-wife now. And she couldn't understand why. And I couldn't articulate that to her, even though obviously we've got children as well. Very much like yourself, I had to be black and white. No matter what was in my way, I was going to achieve success. Even to the point of I wouldn't see the children because I was so determined to get to the end goal. And when I got there, it was not what I expected.
No.
And it's often the case with people. And that's what, again, fascinates me with yourself, that you're not trying to monetize it.
No. Just on the relationship side, I think I've now, next year is going to be 20 years I'll be married to my wife. And yeah, so it's,
That takes work.
It takes work, but it's a journey. So
yeah,
and you have to learn. So like, there may be something that, you know, I'm not happy with her and she's not happy, but you talk and you communicate and you get through that. So it's, but you have to put the work in for it.
Absolutely.
In terms of the monetization of it, we've sort of done our business the other way around. So normally people create a brand and then you try to monetize it. And then through monetization, whether you're doing training programs or anything, you then try to do your own investments and so on. So we've did it the other way around with no social media or anything. Many people that now approach me, they didn't, that I've known for years, didn't even know I was in property. So we did 20 years of property investment, development and so on. And then we decided, okay, let's create a brand and try to do it this way. Part of the reason for it was, as Malky and Sanjay, I couldn't approach corporations. They're like, well, who are you? But then if I now create a brand, get it out there, get people to understand it, then I can go to Watches of Switzerland and say, look, this is who we are. Can we do something here? Same with Saracens and the other companies that we've been working with. But you need, a brand is very important for it.
Yeah.
And with what we're keen to do is, when we create a brand, we can have so many people behind it. If you're just Malky and Sanjay, you have to be involved in every aspect of it. And then you then get away from the whole reason why you set the brand up or got into property, because you got into property because you want to free up spare time. You want to spend more time with the family. You want to go on holidays. You want to pursue the hobbies, whether it be football, F1, and so on. If you now need to be involved in every element of it, it's the opposite reason you got involved in property in the first place.
Which, again, that will be a question that I'm going to ask why you got involved. But do you feel there was an added pressure for you to obviously either get started in property or to become successful, because you come from such a background and you had to try harder? Because I can certainly relate to that. For example, you've had to study for 2 hours rather than 5 minutes to get on stage and present.
There's no added pressure, because when we were doing property, there's only pressure if you put it out there, look, I'm just starting on property now. And then there's added pressure on yourself, because you're putting yourself on Instagram to try to get your first deal, first rent to rent. And that, the pressure comes from other people. You just got to, for us, it's always been about being content with what we're doing. I learned on my first day at work, I think my boss sent me an email and it had something on there about, you know, don't worry about what others are earning, worry about what you're earning. Don't worry about what others are doing, worry about what you're doing. This is before WhatsApp and all the rest of it. It used to be email forwards. And I looked at that, I'm like, actually, yeah, do you know what? That is so true. What happens in most time in work, everyone's worrying about, well, he's done this, he's just got this promotion. But just worry, are you happy with what you have? So we've always been from that background. The only pressure sort of comes when you start putting on socials, then someone may message you, how are you getting on with this project or so on. But we're never fazed by that. We're like, are we happy with this project? May have fallen behind for whatever reason, because you've got these price rises, material shortages and so on. But look, just focus on the end goal. End goal is getting this done, getting it refinanced, and we're going to move on to the next one. So we've always been of that mindset, and we'll continue to do that. So the only pressure should come from us, not from external sources.
What about your family? Did you feel any pressure from them, I mean?
No, well, the only pressure that happened was when I quit my job. I didn't tell my wife. I didn't tell her. I told her 2 weeks after. I had a three-month notice period. She was like, are you sure what you're doing? I said, look, trust me, I've got this. Yeah. I'll make a success of it. And then obviously, you know, we were never going to fail. It was always going to be a success. And I knew all I need to do is just get one development successfully done, and that's my salary there. But that just made me more driven, and it made us focus now on bigger and better deals. So we don't raise money from, we're quite different from other property companies out there that are on social media. So we don't ask for investor finance. If we do anything with a client, we say, okay, let's help you build a property portfolio. You buy the property, buy it in your name. The finances is in your name. We'll help you with the build. We'll work with a lender that will guarantee your exit. So before anyone starts with us, they know what they're buying it for, what the build is, and what their exit is. And then you've got it in your name. So basically, the majority of the clients that we've done, if I've done one project, they always say, okay, let's come back for the second. And we don't want to expand too big, too quickly, because I've seen on socials how someone starts, okay, let me just monetize it. The reason you're successful is because you've been working with these sets of head contractors.
Yeah.
Soon as you find another guy from socials that looks great because he's putting this, we do all these developments, it could go wrong. And with the majority of the time is you've expanded so much, you've now instilled the same trust that you've got in your original contractors with this new person, and it all goes wrong. And after that, the loser is obviously your client. So we don't want to expand that way. So we'll keep it where we're just maybe switch up 10-20% the following year for what we're doing with client work, but we won't overexpand because we still want to focus on just delivering.
And off the back of that, when would you say you feel accomplished? When would you say you've accomplished your dream or your job as Savoy's or as Malkit?
Well, as Savoy's, when we set this up, we said, look, it's not about now. It's about 10 years from now. So to build a brand takes 10 years. It's not 2 years. So we're only 2.5 years in. I'll relate it back to like some music. I was a big fan of hip hop growing up, and I watched this documentary it's about Bad Boy Records. And when Diddy was starting off, Puffy, he basically took his team to watch an R. Kelly concert. It was in Madison Square Gardens. And he goes, and it was huge, massive, and it was a big event. He goes, okay, look, this is where we need to be. And then he did a song, More Money, More Problems, which you probably heard. Yeah. And he got these shiny suits out. And they were like, Puff, we don't want to be wearing these. He goes, remember that R. Kelly concert? Look, you need to do this. You have to have a vision. Mm. So, and it may sound so big, but we've got big plans for it. I won't reveal them. But big part of what we do is we have this mindset saying no limits. So nothing's off limits. Mm. So we just want to push, and I want to do stuff that people aren't doing within the industry.
Where does that come from? That's what fascinates me, is because there's so many people in the property world, and they're doing fantastic things. All the educational companies, they're doing great things. You've got developers doing great things, and individuals they're building their own portfolios, which is great. But as you've already touched on, property is boring. There's no getting away from that. If you're just buying a property, developing it, it can become quite mundane. But yeah, I mean, with yourself, you're building something different. You're working with Watford, obviously Terry Stone now, obviously Saracens as well. So yeah, explain more.
Well, we've been watching socials over the years, and I'm like, everyone does the same thing. Mm. Everyone creates a brand or becomes a company, and you want to raise investor finance. Everyone's just copying the same model. Mm. Everyone goes into training and there's a similar sort of training plan. I'm like, why don't we just create our own flow? You know, so what I found was we're doing some great projects. And, you know, we contacted some magazines. I'm like, okay, look, no one's paying attention to us. So we create our own bubble.
Yeah.
And then it's like what happens in, say, like rap music or anything. You create your own industry.
Yeah.
You create your own section and people will then come back to you. No. I'm a big fan of Jay-Z.
Yeah.
No one wanted to sign him. So he created his own label, put out an album. It went gold. And then Def Jam they came back and then they signed him. They signed him on a better deal. And it's effective with us as well. Well, okay, let's just create something here. And I don't even want to make any money for him. I'm going to give it for free. So to put the events on that we do, it costs sort of 20-25K. but we want to give back. We get some money back from some sponsors and stuff. We're not concerned about monetizing it, but it's about giving back to people. You create your own. Yeah, you create your own movement within it. So we mentioned earlier where I've had some success stories where people have turned up, they've made friends and they've got job opportunities and, you know, change their career path as a result of this. And this is what we want to sort of see. But for us, it's about, you have to stand out from the crowd. And if you can do it by solving people's problems, you know, everyone's a winner.
And it very is, that's so many people that are getting into this industry now are sold a pipe dream. And I often have the conversation with people, do you really want to get into property? Or are you being sold a dream by someone that says that they're in property? Obviously, I'm not going to name any names. Because it takes a lot of work. And I mean a lot of work. So I've been doing it, not just property, but building a brand, and I've been investing for, well, similar time to yourself. I mean, but it's not no money down, always no money down, but you sort of get the drift. I mean, but you are going to have to sacrifice. And a lot of people are not willing to do that. So always, almost a lot, 90% of people say, why are you trying to not allow me to invest? I said, but what I want you to know is there's a lot of sacrifice you're going to have to make. Family time, if you don't want to sacrifice that, then there's going to be other things that you're going to have to sacrifice. Again, job, like you gave up your job. And it could have had repercussions with your wife not telling your wife, which could have gone sideways.
Yeah, definitely.
But what I'd say to people is if they're looking to get into property, especially now, is definitely get educated or reach out to you, because I know you're open to respond, and you always respond to messages on Instagram. You always do.
So it's either myself or Sanjay, but the idea for us is a lot of people are so keen on having a mass following, but where they only have say 10 followers or 100 followers, and someone gives them a comment, you should sort of respond back.
Yeah.
And for us is like, you know, people message us saying, you know, so inspiring, so on. And we try to just respond back to them. So either as positive or negative comments, you know, we try to come back to everyone, because I think someone may feel a connection from it. And we want to inspire people to do great things in property. Where you touched on earlier is property is not easy. It may look easy. And some people posing next to cars and so on to sell training. But it's, for us, it's taken, we did 20 years of work for us to be where we are.
Yeah.
So I think if anyone looks at it, it looks like it's polished. Oh, look, they're doing X, Y, Z. Mm. But we put in the work 20 years ago when people were out, when we were in our early 20s and we were investing in properties, others were out blowing money in clubs and all the rest of it. Mm. And we were putting in the work. And I was doing that while working full time and the property investment stuff. So we have constantly been working continuously through it. Even up until I left work, I'll be do my work. I'll come home, spend time with the family. Mm. When they go to bed, I may go to bed 12, 1 o'clock, and I'll be up at 6:30 to get ready to be in work at 8 o'clock in the city. Mm. But I had to put that work in for us to be where we are today.
And take me back to that time where you've put a lot of sacrifice in, you're investing. Obviously, the times then were different, but I know the story because I've heard it. But for people that don't, take me back to when you first met Sanjay's dad.
Yeah, so that's where it all started. So it was early 2000s. I think I just started work. We went out on a night out, had some drinks. And Sanjay used to live literally around the corner from where I was. So when I pulled up in the cab outside his house, he goes, look, why don't you come in for one drink? I said, okay, sure. So I came in. He went straight to bed, as he always does. And I was just sitting with Sanjay's dad, and he gave me a beer. I was having a chat with him. He goes, Malky, look, he goes, you really should get investing in property. I'm like, okay, why is it? He goes, look, because there's these new buy-to-let products. So for those that don't know, buy-to-let products only sort of came about sort of late 90s. Up until then, if you wanted to buy a secondary property, you would have to get a commercial loan. and the rates will be a lot higher. So it wasn't as attractive. With the buy-to-let products that came in, it was more or less at residential rates. So it was your, it's very similar to your home rates. So with that information buzzing in my head, I went straight home. There's no right move or anything at that time. The internet was still quite new. I got out the leader paper. I went through in the middle section. They used to have a home section. I flicked through looking at properties. Okay, that one's this, this was this. And I found one which was up for, I believe, 80K plus. I went to auction a few weeks later with my dad. We purchased that at 120. I came back home, contacted some agents. And once I got the keys, I got them in there. I said, what's it worth? What can I rent it for? And the guys go, look, I can sell this for 145 right now, 150. And the rent, I believe, was about 850 on it. I'm like, wow, look at this. It's quite similar to like half my salary for work at that time, just from this property. I'm like, okay, wow. So that's how the whole journey started. So I think in that first year, we purchased three properties because financing was quite easy. So if you purchase it for 120, it's worth 150. You can refinance it at 85%.
And pretty quickly as
And it was very quick at that time. And you basically got your money out and you can go again. So we used that strategy when we were starting off to purchase properties, refinance, move on. And the market was moving quite quick. So that was the basis of it. And yeah, it's thanks to Sanjay's dad for the reason why we are here today.
Yeah, big up Sanjay's dad. But we'll cover that with Sanjay. But if thank God you met him, because God knows we wouldn't be sitting in his chair now.
No, definitely. And it's for those that don't know, Sanjay's dad passed away in 2015. Mm. So, but he's obviously had a big impact on myself and Sanjay in terms of financial security, you know, what we can do for our families and so on. Mm. But it's that one moment. But literally, it just takes one moment for your life to change, for either for the good or the worse. Mm. So it's just decisions you make and the timing of making those decisions.
And obviously, that was a catalyst for yourself, that moment there, and Sanjay. That changed both of your lives, I can imagine.
It did. For those that don't know, at that time, I used to... Property Ladder was on TV with Sarah Beeny. So like, I was always watching that. I'm like, it should be good to actually get into property and do this. So that moment just allowed us to get involved. And then you get the property bug. You're so keen on doing, like, with property, the fun aspect of it is the initial buying of it and the refinancing of it. And that bit in the middle, it can be quite frustrating when you're getting it ready for property. But once you have that, you always want to then sort of go back and do that process of buying it, negotiating a price and so on. As we've gone through over 20 years of being in property, it's still sort of that fun bit. Just securing that deal when you're negotiating with the agent and you get it for what you want and you know you've got it as still. There's still, I don't know how to describe it, but there's a big rush that you get from that.
So as a new person that wants to invest in property, how am I supposed to get that buzz? How am I supposed to get the buzz that you get every time?
I think personally, look, I was a coder, but I didn't really enjoy it. But I went down that route because I thought there was money and stuff in it. Mm. It is profitable to be, say, a programmer and in that industry. You can set up your own company. But if you don't have passion for it, then I don't really recommend doing it. You can do it sort of passively as another form of investment. But if you're going to go into anything, have passion for it. Once you have passion for it, it's not work. Mm. So it's not considered work for me. So I could spend hours researching something, looking into this, going through planning history and stuff, because I'm passionate about it. But if you're not passionate about it, then it's considered work and you won't actually enjoy it. So find something that you enjoy or you've got a passion for, and then, you know, then dedicate yourself to it. You can make money through that.
And I think what a lot of people need to understand is it's not always about, say, numbers, or because there is so many moving parts to it. Yes, there is a lot to understand, but you can bring in people to help with that. And as you have done, you've brought in a team. So again, talk to me a little bit more about that, because you've got 500 tenants. which comes with a lot of issues.
So we've got, it's probably over 500 now. So I think at the start of this year, it was 500, but we've been adding units. So this year, it's probably been our busiest year in terms of doing property developments. We've done our highest ticketed items ever. We've probably done more customer sites than we've done before. So I think probably on 12 customer sites that we've going to deliver. I think we're close to 30 projects that we've done this year. So we just, it's been relentless. And then we obviously stepped it up on social media and all the rest of it. But having so much comes with added responsibility as well. So we've got a management team that look after the properties and the tenants and so on. We've had one member of full-time staff that's left. We've had to bring in two other staff. So within that, we still need to deliver on these for our tenants. And then you've got new tenants that are moving in. You've got landlords that we've got to look after. It's not easy. We're trying to using technology. So we use quite work quite closely with Arthur online in terms of providing an automated software where we're using technology to make our job a little bit easier, from signing contracts to credit checks and all the rest of it. For but yeah, so this time of year is like boilers are breaking down, so we're on the phone to British Gas and like British Gas may not turn up, and it is time consuming, but I think we're getting on top of it. In terms of HMOs, we've hit the target of HMO properties that we want under our management, and we're focusing more on single lets now. So they're a lot easier, a little bit more passive to manage, because once you've got a tenant in there, it tends to be okay. We get like policies and stuff in place, like British Gas breakdown cover on drainage, electrics, gas. So if something does go wrong, it's just a telephone call to get someone in. What we also do is we sit back and we always reflect on what's gone right, what hasn't gone right. Where we've had, like, for example, we had issues where we had a blockage in the radiators, and as some engineer is trying to flush it out, he's ended up damaging the boiler. I've had to replace the boiler, but I had six tenants were in the house, so we had to then move them across some of the empty rooms that we had within our portfolio to get them in there. And like, this all took sort of 5 days, replacing a boiler, a water cylinder, and so on, and getting these tenants back in. But you know, they weren't happy, but you then had to communicate with them. Look, so sorry for the inconvenience, but you know, the temperature's dropping. We don't want to leave you in a house with no heating. We can either provide you like with a temporary heater, electric one, and we'll get this done soon. Or if you want to move, we can move you. And then once it's all done, we'll move you back in. So, but yeah, I think communication is the biggest aspect there. And you can't put your head in the sand and trying to ignore it. Just inaction is the worst thing.
Yeah. Well, I 100% agree with you. So how many members of staff do you have now?
So the team's actually three in our property management side. Then you've got myself and Sanjay. We look after the development side. We're looking to open our office at the end of next month, which will then allow us to bring on a couple of more staff. So in terms of the Savoy's business, we have the development side. So that's just myself, Sanjay, and Hardeep are involved in. We've got the management side of it. So these are our own and client projects that we now manage and let out. We also have a lending side to our business. So that actually came about, we had an opportunity with some directors from Shawbrook that left and they set up a startup company. So we invested into that company. Okay. And that was going quite well. So I think they lent over a 2 year period, they lent like something like 16 million. From it, but they only had one funding line. But then when COVID happened, that funding line got pulled.
Right.
And the business sort of came redundant. And myself and Sanjay had our own little limited company that sat underneath, like a sister company, where we could lend our own money to the parent company. They'll lend it out and then they'll provide it back to us. So when that shut down, we then rebranded that to Savoy's Lending. And then we now, working with CPC Finance and some of our own clients, we lend out our own money to either our clients at the same rate that they'll get outside, or to clients through CPC Finance where it may have an adverse credit history due to getting divorced, but they've got this site, all the numbers stack up, but because he's, you know, this guy fell into depression for a few months, he's got some CCJs and so on, but by him finishing this site, he can now sell this for a profit. So it's a sort of a niche little business that we have. And then as we'll go, we'll probably look at sort of growing that. We're adding sort of an educational arm to our business where, you know, we're providing good value training. So we had, last month, we did our first commercial to residential crash course. We had 30 people that paid, attended. The feedback was exceptional from it. And that we initially were looking to just do that as a one-off, but from the sounds of it, there's no one giving a valued course from someone that's actually doing live projects and stuff at the time out there. So we'll look at probably trying to provide this maybe on an online format or physical in 2023.
So there's a lot going on within your business.
Yeah, and we're also going to add on a maintenance part of the business as well. So these are for clients' properties that we manage where we can, if they don't want to get the repair done, we can look at getting a repair done within. But then what we've successfully done is if we've started up subsidiary companies of Savoy's, we then, the people that we're working with, say like Hardy, we've given them a share of the business. So rather than providing a salary, we've said, okay, look, why don't you come part of this? Let's run this together.
That's great.
And you've got this. So, and it motivates people. I think too many people are concerned about having 100% of a business, but 100% of nothing is nothing. But 50% of something is better than that 100% of nothing.
No, I completely agree with that. And with so much going on, it's amazing how your company is operating at the minute.
Yeah, I think what we try to do is just empower people within it.
Yeah.
So, and give them the trust and, okay, you go ahead and do this. It works well, but there's elements of it where you have people that let you down, but we always look for the good in someone. So we're quite people. So if I meet someone, I'm like, I know whether I like him or not. Okay. I know whether I can work with them or not. So the ones that I feel like a good vibe, positive energy from, then we go with them. If they let us down, then so be it. But everyone that comes on board, we're like, look, we're here for a process. Look, we're on the process. I think we're on the verge of doing something special within the industry.
Grimp.
And, you know, you'll be with us for life. You know, we're not there. We're not focused on the money like others. We're focused on delivering and working with good people.
So what sort of traits would you look for in an individual to work with yourself?
Like honesty, integrity, you know, delivering on what you promise. You know, those are the key. Do you know what I mean? Like trust. If you say you're going to do something, do it. And if you haven't done it, just put your hands up and say, look, I haven't done it. We all make mistakes. No, I say it like when I have a meeting with Sanjay or the team, actually, do you know what? I was supposed to do that. That's my fault. I haven't done it. But do you know what? I'm going to action that now. Rather than saying, yeah, it's all done. It's all done. And it's a lie. Because then the knock-on effects of that will be quite big for everyone involved.
Yeah. No, I can certainly relate to that. A 1,000,000%, and I'll tell you why off air.
Okay.
Because my viewers will get bored if I keep repeating the same thing. But one thing I will ask you is tell me something that you know that others don't.
Well, there's quite a lot to it. I'm a avid Liverpool fan. I'm a big F1 fan, but those that follow my personal Instagram page will probably see that. But yeah, no, we're passionate about our hobbies. And the good thing is now with our business Savoy's and what we're doing in our own other personal property ventures, it allows us to pursue those passions.
And I think with your passion through property, that's enabled you to go, because obviously I do follow you on social media.
Yeah.
With F1, I link that back to your or everyone's childhood, because I always say it fascinates me from your childhood. I believe it shapes you into the person you become today. But being at the F1, you reward yourself by going to things like the F1.
So for the last 5 years, we've always gone to that Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, So the good thing about it is right at the end of the year. So in Jan, myself and Sanjay just sit down saying, we don't have actual proper physical, this is what I need to do. I need to do this. We say, okay, look, we're going to do X amount of projects. We hit these successfully. Let's just book this now. This is our reward. And it's not like we're measuring ourselves on it. We've already, I know we're going to hit those targets. We say, okay, look, bang, bang, bang. This is going to be done. Let's book this. This is our end of year treat. And then we have myself, Sanjay, Hardy, and then we have a couple of other friends that came out there this year. And then we hope to do the same.
When's your next one books?
We're going to book it in January. So we're just waiting for the release of some tickets. And then we'll book it. So we try to do it where it's an experience. So last year we were in the McLaren paddock. This time we're with Red Bull. And the great thing is you get to obviously meet the drivers and personnel from the team. So it gives you that sort of personal experience.
I mean, I'll see your last one. And I always think of him as Malcolm. What's his name?
Oh, Martin Lawrence.
That's it.
Yeah.
Great. Absolutely great that was. But so what's next for yourself?
Next for ourselves is, look, we're just going to carry on, keep going. Any opportunities that come or are offered to us, like, we always explore. So we've got some people that want to venture up and do something jointly. We're always open to listening. But for us, it's just business as usual. We keep pushing forward. We still keep pushing ahead with taking derelict, defunct properties, converting them into homes for, you know, working professionals. And, you know, I don't see that aspect of it changing. But there's no out and out targets. I need to do this. The targets that we had, we already hit. Now it's trying to do something different. And that comes from, obviously, like, we met Terry Stone. We did some collaboration on our Savoy's event Q3 with him, which went down a big hit. We then collaborated with him.
Yeah, tell me more about that. Sorry.
So everything is, I think life's an invite to a conversation. So when you're there, if you see someone, I'm always the type to go up to him now, just say, hi, look, my name's Malkit. I love what you're doing. Whether it's property, I don't know, football, film. With Terry Stone, I was literally a week before, I was watching one of his series of Rise of the Foot Soldier films. And then we went to some, it was an American Express event. I'm like, Sanjay, that's Terry Stone. I just said, I'm just going to go up to him. And then just went up to him, had a chat with him. We exchanged details. And then I just said, look, do you know what? I had to look at his story, because he actually started work, left school with no GCSE, started working McDonald's at 16, left, then set up One Nation, Garage Nation, Rave Nation, which were huge events companies, putting on some of the biggest raves and so on in the world. Then switched to go to films. I said, look, I emailed him. I said, look, your story sounds amazing. Let's take you out to dinner. And we went from there. Then we then collaborated to doing the Savoy's Q3 event. And we linked in with the Rise, linked in with the premieres that he was going to be doing in Marbella and London. But that was just from that meeting. And then from meeting some people in his circle, I've connected with some actors, musicians that, you know, we're in contact with. And we don't know what's going to come from that. But I think it's, most people want in property only want to connect with property people. But I think it's worth connecting with people outside, because you don't know what collaboration you'll be able to do as a result.
So the introvert that didn't really like speaking to people, I suppose, has then gone up to an actor and made a huge success of a collaboration that could turn into something really successful. Obviously, what he's done, what Terry Stone's done, is really been successful. Pretty much through a lot of hard work following what he's done over the years. But you yourself as well started in McDonald's, didn't you?
Yeah, I started in McDonald's in 95. I was trying to get a part-time job. So I was at college. And then my friends were working in like Tesco, Sainsbury's. I remember applying to like Tesco's and Sainsbury's, couldn't get in. And then the only place I could get a part-time job was McDonald's. and which some friends actually found quite hilarious because it's obviously they considered it a little bit downgrading. But I got a job there, but I learned so much about business. I learned so much about the hard work and stuff that you had to put in. I learned that, look, I need to make something of my life because I don't really want to be this person that's, you know, full-time you're working in McDonald's because you saw them, because it's good to a certain aspect. Is you can learn a lot from it. There's a lot of backstabbing with manage because everyone's quite young. Even if you're a manager, you could be 18, 19 years old, you'd be a manager. Mm. And I just learned, okay, look, now I'm at college. You need to make it a success, go to university, get something, because otherwise, look, you're going to be stuck somewhere like this. Mm. And it's going to be hard to progress because the money that you're on is effectively minimum wage. And it's not enough to, you know, to have a living, even pay rent yourself. So I learned a lot from that. And I think I was there for two and a half years or so. Then I went on to work for Halfords. And I've got a passion for cars. So that was quite fun. So I learned a lot with that. Learned from like fitting audio systems to, you know, being able to change brakes and so on a car, which was quite fun. But then, yeah, then that led me to getting my full-time job once I left university. But there's so many lessons you can actually learn from working part-time jobs, from people, from organizations, understanding how a business works, you know, what works for them, what doesn't.
And I think it's important for people to recognize that even though you're sitting here now, and yes, you've invested in property, you've built or building a brand, not built a brand because it takes time. You're building a brand. You've met actors and you've met musicians. It wasn't always like that for you.
No, but these opportunities, I'll be honest, these opportunities only come as a result of social media as well, because you have that out there. But yeah, the social media has also allowed me to sort of get out of my comfort zone, build that confidence.
Yeah, I think you've been hard on yourself, I'll be honest. And the reason for that is, yes, social media does help, and it's helped me get out there. We wouldn't be able to do a podcast. I wouldn't be able to reach as many people. But you have, again, you've walked up to Terry Stone. You've gone up to other people. You've created these events, and you've really sort of exposed yourself. You've become vulnerable when other people haven't. And you've put yourself in a position where a lot of other people want to do it but won't put themselves on the line. And that's why the synergy that I've got with yourself, Terry Stone as well, works at McDonald's. I worked, that was my first real job. I worked at McDonald's and I learned systems and processes. And I was like, oh, that fascinates me, because if I implement that in my business, I can then grow and scale my own business. I was like, yep. So that's what I've done.
Yeah, that's really good.
So that, again, a lot of similarities with that. And for anyone listening, McDonald's great, because it gives you a sort of a stepping stone to what sort of systems you should have in place. Because wherever you go, whatever McDonald's you look at, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
It's the same system, same process. But yeah, I think you are being too hard on yourself. It's not all down to social media. You've worked very hard.
No, we have worked hard. But I think I've seen so many people within business, property, build themselves up. These are people that I physically know, and then something can change and overnight you could lose it all. So we're actually quite
interesting.
Yeah, so we're quite concerned about making sure that we stay humble, because as growing up, I had surrounded by so many arrogant people.
But what would you do if you lost it? The social media?
No, well, I'm not too worried about social media, but like your own business and stuff, because I had a meeting once with someone from, it was basically the managing director of Shawbrook Bank, and we're just talking about how, you know, we can improve the service. And I said to him, look, at the end of it, my house is on the line. Okay. Every deal that I do, you know, sign a personal guarantee. So if that, it doesn't matter if I put it in a limited company, but you've still got a personal guarantee. They could take the property away and then they come after you for your house. So I understand. So the risks and stuff that we take, we want to ensure that they're calculated.
Yeah.
So we look at things that like a prior approval as opposed to full planning.
Yeah.
Because I want to take away elements of risk. But yeah, that humility just comes from just seeing other people that were quite arrogant and some of them have ended up, from their own decisions, ended up losing their businesses and everything. And then you have to start again. But if you're arrogant and then you lose it all and you have to start again, then you won't have anyone around you to help you.
No, that's a great point. And again, what would you do if you lost all of the social media presence, if you like, and you had to sort of rebuild?
I think in life, the most important thing is time. So you can go broke, you can lose everything, but you can't buy back time. So I'm not too concerned about social media. I'm concerned about securities and stuff for our families of mine and Sanjay's. We want to ensure that we can offer them a life that probably that we didn't have with growing up. But social media can be taken away from you just overnight. I've met so many people that built up an account, 10,000 followers, and they ended up either with fake followers, someone's hacked their account and they've lost it. Mm. That can just go. And what you find is, to try to get your account back, there is no helpline for it. You can just message, but you don't know whether you're going to get anything back. You know, you just take Kanye West, for example. He had a massive reach, 100 million or so on, but he lost it overnight.
Mm. And the reason I say that is because I wanted to relay it back to your events.
Okay.
You have 10,000 followers, for example, but you can almost cherry pick who goes to your events because they're invite only, which is, it's fantastic in a way because you're in full control of who's on your platform at any one point, which is where you want to be. And you can at any one point say that this is who we want there and this is who we want here, which is, you need to be in control of your social media account.
Yeah, and well, we had a look at basically outsourcing the social media, but then it's not going to be reflective of who we are.
Exactly, yeah.
Because if you then just give someone some pictures, they could put something out, but it may not be what you would put out. Mm. So we're concerned about that. And I'm like, okay, look, effectively at the end of it, it's either some videos or some photos and so on. So we just, at the moment, it's within our control and we want to engage with people as well.
Yeah.
In terms of our events, what we do there is, it is invite only. So sponsors invite people. We have some ballot where we'll give 20% of them to people that we don't know. But we just contact people that we're inspired by and we put them in a room. And then we have some, it's not about this person's got 10,000 followers, he's got,
no.
This one's got 500. It's literally just anyone, but you want to have someone that doesn't have a fake account, you know, hasn't posted anything about property. You want to get property people from different bits of their journey in a room together. And what we found was, if you go to a property event, and we've been to quite a few over the last 3-4 years, and then you tend to be like 90% male. And if it's hosted by a brown host, it'll be majority of the people that are attending are brown. If it's like a white host, majority will be from that background. We're like, okay, let's have an event where it's 50-50 in terms of male, female, and you've got a great mix of people from all communities, white, brown, you know, oriental, so on, in one room. And just make it an environment where you just feel relaxed to network and so on. And we're not taking anything from that. It just, look, it's there. If you make something of it, then, you know, great.
There's again a question about the networking events. When you went to them, these other property networking events, how did you feel in the room? Because when I go to networking events, I feel quite anxious. As a person that looking to network with other people, I felt really anxious to engage with anyone. But when I went to yours at Saracens, it was completely different. I mean, I was with Alfred. And he knows everyone, so that was made easier. But it was different because everyone was welcoming. It was different because everyone knew each other.
Yeah. So what we did when we looked at setting an event up, I'll switch it back. So I think we were in an event. I think it was in November last year, and I paid to go to this event. It was like £30-40. And then we had myself, Sanjay, and I think Hardy was there with us. And I sat there and he had two guest speakers and they just came up, talked about some changes in planning. and then you're selling their course. I'm like, I've learned nothing from this. Then the next speaker came up and he did the same. You know, it was just a big, it was just basically a pitch for his course.
Yeah.
I'm like, the whole purpose of this is you're supposed to learn something. And I thought, well, generally the hosts should say, look, you can come down, maybe just mention at the end you got your course, but ensure you give something of value to the people that are paid now to attend. Then when we're looking at that particular event, the only fun part of that was right at the end, people congregating near the bar. And then you just, oh, I'm so-and-so. I'm like, Sanjay, really great if you could just take this moment and make it 3 hours. No one's doing that. Fortunately, we're in a financial position where we could just go out with no sponsors and stuff, and we put that out. And then I think we got basically a couple of people to come in and back us. And as a result of putting these out, then we've had more and more people saying, look, can we get involved in the sponsors part? And we say, look, let make it of value to the people that turn up. Yeah. You know, give them something for value. Even our events are free. Like there's a goodie bag and stuff that comes with it, and there'll be some gifts and stuff in there. We put together a magazine with, there'll be some adverts in there, but you'll have quite a lot of articles which are actually quite informative, but try to over deliver. So when we do an event, we try not to over promise. We just say, look, we've got an event, bang, turn up. And then we're like, okay, in our minds, how do we switch up where you make it sort of the best networking event? So I think you turned up to the one that we had at Saracens,
yeah.
And with that particular one, I think we sort of made it our end of year party, but I didn't tell anyone. So the music came on, and then basically, I think the last hour and a half, everyone was dancing away and so on. You know, it was a free bar. You had some celebrities and stuff that were there. Denise Lewis was there. You had some other actors, musicians, footballers that came to the event. You didn't know who you're going to meet there, so it was not necessarily all property people.
No, and that's what was good. And that's, again, I don't know if you'd been to any of these property networking events. I don't go to them because they're boring, to be completely honest with you, and they don't actually network, so it's completely irrelevant.
Let me ask you this. Why do people that set up a new networking event make it exactly the same as all the other ones? Well, you turn up, you have basically just pitches, and
for that reason,
and then you just go to the bar afterwards, and you may then talk to a few people, but majority of the people by then have left.
The reason that I thought about this as well is they want to sell their program, so they're going to get as many people in the room to eventually sell the program, which to me, you're going to a networking event to network, not to be sold to. If I wanted to be sold to, just tell me what your product is. If I want to buy it, I'll buy it. If not, don't sell it to me. People like to buy, not to be sold to. But for me, networking is great. Not being sold to. I don't want to be sold to. And you'll find that anyone that's listening going to these networking events, there will, 9 times out of 10, there'll be a pitch of some kind. It might be a soft sell. That's okay. The better and bigger networking events, that's all right, though. At least they'll tell you that. However, again, at your one, there wasn't that at all. And the people in the room, they're doing what they're saying they're doing as well. And I think that was key for me. The people that I know in the property world, they're at least they're doing what they're saying. They're doing the conversions. They're doing the flips. They're doing the service accommodation, if you like. Or they've been on the TV. They're not just going, I make this money. I make this much money, and I've got a Lamborghini. I don't care.
No. This is exactly what we call people that we feel inspired by, because I think people inspire people. Just coming back to the course aspect, networking events, what you tend to find is these networking events, regardless of whether they're pinned, PPN and so on, you'll always end up with a host. They'll try it for 6 months and then the event shuts down and they try to get someone else. Whereas what we've done is just go completely opposite, because why are you going to do an event which is the same as one in a neighboring town, city, so on? It's just the same, and you have the same people moving around. And I think, look, if you want to make something successful, solve people's problems. You know, so people want to network. You want to be in a great environment. You know, you don't really want to turn up to a basement of the Holiday Inn or so on for a networking event.
No.
Make it where people feel inspired. So when we've done ours, of like, let's change it up. Never have it at the same place. Just, you know, have it here, have it there, where you turn up. So when you turn up to the Saracens event, you know, you walk, you probably didn't see it, but you may, you walk past a pair of signed Messi's boots. So they were there and you had some trophies and stuff. It's, it feels inspiring coming into there.
Yeah. No, absolutely it does. And then the same when you go to Watford and wherever you're going to hold them in Q1.
Yeah.
Which obviously to be revealed. But I mean, the plans going in to 2023 yet to be revealed, but I can imagine that you've got some big ones.
Yeah, so well, we want to just keep, it's for us, it's fun. So so now, just even holding the events, putting it together, we've got obviously myself, Sanjay and Hardy, that we take different elements on. So, okay, you look after this. Look, Hardeep's not an editor or anything, but he puts that whole magazine and stuff together.
Okay.
In terms of like a lot of the branding stuff, he's been working on that. Sanjay works on, he's really good with negotiating, putting, you know, the suppliers for like the bartender, the catering, the event people, getting the sponsors and so on. So there's different elements of it. And I think we sort of enjoy that bit. Mm-hmm. And then when you see the it all come together, it's actually nice. And you can see the expressions on people's faces that they really enjoyed it. And the, I think the last event we had, the socials went a little bit mad in terms of the amount of retweets and, you know, people like even a month on, 2 months on. We had someone 2 days ago that posted some pictures from the event. So it just shows the impact that you've had, you know? So I quite like where you see someone that wasn't connected to another person has turned up, and now they've become friends. And
I like that, what you just said there. I think you've concentrated on the impact rather than the income. So it's almost like impact over income. And ultimately it does generate income, but you're looking in 10 years' time, it's going to generate re-income.
Yeah, it's, we've got that vision. So it's like, this is where we need to be.
Yeah.
Okay, let's not worry about this.
Don't worry.
The money that you're spending is just marketing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but what you're actually doing is by me delivering and having a great event, and if you go back and talk to it to someone else, it's having the right impact.
Correct.
And then, but our, the main focus for us is do not lose sight of our key principles, you know, being the honesty and the integrity, you know, the hard work and so on that we're putting in. We'll stay focused on that. But it is nice to see that other people are enjoying it and people coming up to us that we may not have met and saying, look, you know, I really want to come to the event. I know it looks fab. How can I get involved? And some people that we met yesterday offered to volunteer helping out because it's on the day you have, I think the Saracens one, we had 230 people that turned up. I don't know many networking events that get that many people to turn up to an area of North London, you know, which is probably not the easiest bit place to travel to. But yeah, get everyone in one venue on the day. Whereas for us, it's really rewarding to see.
No, it was powerful. I mean, you've had some huge successes, both on and, I say, or in property and outside of property. But one question I want to ask is, what's been your biggest failure? I know you don't like the word failure, or learning, I should say. What's been your biggest learning throughout your life?
I would say basically the planning system. So I think we had some application in for like a new build and we said, okay, you know, this should pass because like neighboring ones have done this and it failed. And I went through another planning application because the architect said, well, if you have a look at it, it's about this point here, bring the rear extension on this in a little bit, they'll probably approve it. And then that got failed, then I gone to appeal and that didn't work. And so in the end, I just, rather than making a new build, I basically just added a double story extension onto the side of an existing house. And then I learned, okay, look, there's so much uncertainty in this planning process because I think the planning system in the UK is broken. It's not fit for purpose. It's rather than a planning department, it's more like planning control. Mm. They're looking at reasons to fail it rather than approve it. So why don't we take where an element where we've got certainty? So that's where we've moved into a lot of prior approval. So in 2013, when class B1A to C3 came in. So offices to residential conversions. We're one of the first within our area. We took an office, converted it from a two-story office. We converted that into five self-contained units, which was quite profitable. We said, okay, look, bang. So I think in that first sort of 12 months, we did three of those conversions, and everyone sort of cottoned on to it. And then basically the profit sort of went from it, but we still found some gems of deals when we did that. But now, obviously, with the new Class MA, it's a lot easier to find a commercial to resi deal, because it's not just necessarily offices now. Mm. It's basically any commercial property, long as it's, you just have to check the use class.
What about outside of property? What's been your biggest learning?
Outside of property, I would say basically people and being let down by people. You know, the ones that you try to help win, they're the ones that have ended up sort of letting me down the most. So what I found is, as you progress in life, your circle gets smaller. Mm. So we used to have quite a big friend circle. And then over the years, so it was literally just down to a handful. And people aren't as loyal as you'd expect. So the loyalty that, say, I was showing to people wasn't there on their side.
Do you struggle to trust because of that?
No, I'm the opposite. So I show too much trust. And where Sanjay is probably the opposite way.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, look, I like this guy. Let me go with it. This is how we met Hardeep. I'm like, okay, got him on side. And Sanjay's like, are you sure? So no, look, let's go with it. And it's worked. So that's worked for me with the head contractors and stuff that we've used.
Yeah.
And that was down to trust. So, okay, look, I believe in this guy. But then I've had that where contractors have let me down, done such a bad job. But then I never worked with them again. But the ones that have, I've been working with them for like 10 years.
Or a better question would have been, do you struggle to set boundaries for people?
For me, it's the friendship aspect. So I like to become friends. I'm like, we're on a journey together. So whereas I suppose it should be more business, but for the way I treat it, it's more the friendship aspect. But then Sanjay comes in from that business side. Okay, you know, we need to make sure that he doesn't let us down with this. But this is where we both work quite well.
Mm.
You know, so we've both got different thoughts of mind, but our goals are the same.
So he will, again, because you've, I suppose, been best friends since you're 11 years of age, that's where you know each other's characteristics and you can help each other out whenever you're going for a low patch. Say it likewise for Sanjay.
Yeah, and it just sometimes, you know, is you need someone to lift you up.
Yeah.
And I think if you're doing any journey, whether it be property, like cryptocurrency trading, so on, there will be moments where you question yourself and you want to give up.
Yeah.
But that's the moment that you actually need to sort of turn around and then keep pushing yourself. It's that element of failure. You only fail when you give up.
Mm.
You just have to do, okay, what do I need to make it a success? Okay, that plan didn't work. We're not going to change the goal. We'll just change the plan.
You change direction.
Yeah.
And that's exactly right. And I've changed direction so many times. I won't quit. That's something that it's not in the vocabulary. I will change direction.
Yeah.
Many people don't understand why. I don't need them to understand. As long as I do and I can rationalize it. I'm okay with that. I know what direction I'm going in, but sometimes it might move left and right. Yeah. And it's never going to be a straightforward trajectory. And people need to understand, again, if you're in property, whatever business it may be, you're going to have to take a left turn or a right turn. You might have to go backwards sometimes in order to go forward. I certainly have, and I would have made, well, you have as well.
Yeah, no, 100%. So it's why I say to people, like, life's not a movie tale.
No.
So I learned basically from school, we're all on the same level.
Yeah.
And then from school, you got some people that stay on the school, do the A levels. Then you got others that want to go to college. You got others that just drop out to maybe do apprentice, or they go straight trying to work. But then as you go through life, everyone's journey then just separates a little bit. And then for like where myself and Sanjay are now is, there's very few people that can relate and understand where we are and what we're doing, you know, and we find it quite important to, you've got the younger generation, just to try to give back to them and to provide that support. Even before I came here today, I met another property investor and they had some questions on like the direction they're taking. They've got a project that hasn't got completely to plan. And so look, we've got half of it done. Look, you've got this element here. Now, what you need to do is speak to your architect, get this done. Look, do this. Once you've done it, we can discuss whether it's good for you to sell on or refinance. But look, I'll help you with that. But some people just need that journey. Mm-hmm. Some people know what they need to do, but they need someone to tell it so they can just have that confidence and stuff instilled in them.
I get the impression that you've tried to help the people at when you went to school and you and Sanjay eventually became successful. I get the impression there would have been a hint of jealousy from the people at school. And I get the impression that you've tried to help them, even though you may have got some kind of kickback.
Like, all my friends that I've had, and once we started on this property journey, I'm like, you want to get involved in it. It's quite easy. Many of them actually now bought properties, but some of them probably kicked themselves that they haven't got involved. But I'm like, this is where you need to, what you need to be doing. There's nothing in it for me. Look, you buy it in your name, but I can see how the whole thing works, because I think life's a game. You understand the rules of the game is theirs for you to be played. There's no point going into doing property stuff and not understanding it fully. If the planning side is the most important part, say to our business, I need to know, okay, I'm going to do this prior approval application. I'm buying this property. What are the points that I need to know? So like with prior approval, you know, you need to know where's the parking situation. Has it got this? Is it in a flood risk area? There's noise. Is it going to fail on in a noise assessment and so on? So you just check these off. I'm like, okay, now we can do it. Okay, what can I get out of the property? Mm-hmm. Whereas some people just are fully reliant on just their architect, and the architect may miss something. I know we always question our architect, do you think that's the best design? What about if you change it like this? Just go on Microsoft Paint, just change the layout a little. Oh, actually, yeah, that actually works better. But you have to be able to question them. Don't just take them their word as gospel. Mm-hmm. So it's just that aspect. So I think if you, whatever you're going to do, understand the rules that apply to that industry that you're going into, and then you can then master it.
And in order to get you to where you are now, what's been the best piece of advice you've received?
It was actually a bumper sticker that I saw. This is like mid-90s. I think I just started driving. And I saw on the back of this bumper sticker, it said, life's a risk. life without risk is a risk itself.
Wow.
And I'm like, do you know what? You have to take risks. Because I find that most people want certainty. But for example, where we've made the most money on a deal, we had to take a risk. I didn't have the planning in place. There was some external planning changes that I needed to get through, but the uplift was so great. And there's elements that were certain, elements that were out of our control, but we just needed to get it to cross the line. But you have to take a risk. If you were after 100% certainty, you're not going to do anything, because nothing's certain in life.
Absolutely. And if you could tell your kids anything today, if they were watching this in a couple of years' time, what would be your message to them?
I think you have to follow your passion. So what you're passionate about, and then trying to work out how you're going to make a living from it. Because there's no point for like going through what I've done, 20-odd years of being in property, if you don't like it. Because then you'll end up just hating the whole thing, and it'll have a negative impact on you personally, socially, so on. Just follow something that you're passionate of and work out how you can make a business from it.
And my last question to you, as I ask every guest, is very simple, but summarizes the whole podcast up, is, Malky, are you okay?
Yes, no, I'm probably in the best place that I've probably ever been. Just mentally, yeah, just understanding, reflecting on information. So I've just learned over the years just to analyze things. So events may happen, like things may not go in the right way for you, but I just sit back and try to work out logically, okay, you know, where are we with this? And yeah, I think having a life partner, my wife, is just basically just talking to her about things when it doesn't go right. So I've had this incident with so-and-so, or yeah, this didn't go right. But yeah, I think that communication is what's needed, because I've seen so many people, they look well on the outside, but you know, it's the opposite on the inside.
The self-love.
Yeah.
Self-love is so important. And the fact that you've got someone, a partner that you can talk to, and that you've been working at that for 20 years, it's amazing. Not to say that you have to have a partner, but you've got partner in Sanjay, you've got your own partner as well, you've got the beautiful kids. But it's a powerful, powerful story, and thank you very much for sharing it. I'd love to have you back on with Sanjay as well, and then we can do a second episode, and we can do another one based just on Savoy's as well. Thank you so much for sharing your story.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been quite interesting. It's quite a different podcast from what I was expecting.
No, it's been amazing. Thank you so much for coming on, mate. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Connect You podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please share this on your socials, tag me, and leave a review.